reason for me to use that.
All right, meeting is to meetings come to order.
I thought I was early.
We now have quorum.
This is a late committee, though.
And so, welcome to the Environment and Economic Development Agriculture Division. On our agenda today, we have the Department of Natural Resource Budget Overview with Commissioner Tom Lamwin, Deputy Commissioner Dave Shad, and other division directors. So if we may have you introduce yourself and go on with your presentation.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. For the record, I'm Tom Landwehr. I'm the Commissioner of the Department of Natural Resources. It's been an honor and a pleasure to serve in this position for the last 2 years. The more I travel, the more I realize what a great set of natural assets we have in this state, and we're very fortunate to have those assets as well as the recreational opportunities they provide. And it's wonderful to be able to work with Minnesotans who love their natural environment and do the conservation projects we do. Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, what I'd like to do today is give you an overview of the department, talk about our mission and organization, talk about some of the budget trends in the recent past, and introduce some of our major initiatives for FY14 and 15. And then I'm going to hand it over to Deputy Commissioner Shad, who will in turn bring up the division directors to go into detail about the division budget. So I'm going to give just a very high-level overview and let them get into the detail of the budget. So if you have any real hard questions, please save them for the division director. So. But I will be delighted at any point in time to take your questions related to the budget or anything else for that matter, Mr. Chairman. And then finally, I should also mention that we'll talk about the legacy initiatives as well, which are included in the division, the departmental budget. Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, this is the department's mission statement. What I'd like to point out is the department really has three independent priorities. One is to provide outdoor recreation. One is to provide economic development, especially through things like timber tourism and taconite, the three T's we talk about that are especially important in northern Minnesota, and to provide for managing the state's natural resources, so the native prairies of the state, the wetlands of the state, things that may not be economically exploited, but we still conserve because they're a valuable part of our natural heritage. We are your biologists, we are your geologists, we are your technical professionals on getting things done. And when we make decisions, we really look for that sweet spot where these three areas of priority overlap, where outdoor recreation and economic development, natural resource protection overlap in our decision making so that we make the best decisions for the long-term sustainability of these natural resources and the benefits of Minnesota. We call this integrated resource management, or conservation that works, is the title that we're using for a lot of our initiatives, and I'll use that term again in the near future. It's really how we look at addressing conflicts with respect to use of natural resources, and as you all know, there are always conflicts in the use of natural resources as we balance between exploitation and preservation and try to find, again, that sweet spot where we balance all three priorities. Just very briefly, our organizational structure. In the commissioner's office, besides myself, we have Deputy Commissioner Shad. We have three assistant commissioners, Barb Narramore, Erica Rivers, and Mike Carroll. I have two assistants that provide additional work for us, and that's Bob Meyer, who you know is our government relations director, and Senator Lassard, who is an outreach person, especially for northern Minnesota issues and for sporting issues. But then we have seven functional disciplines, divisions within the department that are shown here on the chart, and these are the divisions that are going to be presenting their budgets later on. We have the Division of Lands and Minerals, headed by Jess Richards. We have the Division of Forestry, headed by Forrest Bull. Division of Fish and Wildlife, led by Ed Bogus. Division of Operations Services, led by Lori Martinson. Ecological and Water Resources, led by Steve Hirsch. Parks and Trails, headed up by Cortland Nelson, and Division of Enforcement, which is headed up by Jim Conrad. And again, each of those people will come up in turn to talk about their division budgets. In addition to having the functional disciplines, we are, of course, spread across the entire state of Minnesota. We have four regions, Northeast Region, headed up by Craig Engwall, Northwest, led by Lori Dowling, Southwest, led by Senator Dennis Fredrickson, and Central Region, headed by Keith Parker. So we have this matrix organization where we have expertise around each of the disciplines housed primarily in St. Paul, the leadership and the program support headed in, housed in St. Paul, distributed to the landscape, to the local offices by virtue of the regional structure. We have more than 200 offices around the state, as you can see, virtually every county of the state. We have more than 2,700 buildings around the state that not only house employees, obviously, but things like state park facilities and so on. So we have a large, very dispersed organization. We have about 2,600 employees across the state and providing, again, that technical expertise in biology, forestry, geology, and in other areas. We use a four-pronged framework for guiding our budgeting process and our results tracking process. I'm just very briefly going to mention these. Conservation That Works is our four-year agenda for priorities that we want to accomplish proactively. A lot of what we deal with is sort of reactive stuff. We have a flood, we respond. We have a forest fire, we respond. We get an invasive species, we respond. So we deal with a lot of reactive things, but we also know that there are certain things we want to promote. So, for instance, we want to promote grassland restoration in the prairie part of the state. Those are things that are identified as strategic priorities in our Conservation That Works document. Conservation Agenda is a set of indicators that tells us for some of those priorities how we're moving. So, for instance, what are the number of acres of native prairie protected is an indicator that we use as we look at the impact that we're having and the outcomes we're trying to achieve. We have an outcomes tracking system. Of course, in 2008, the voters passed a legacy amendment. Much of that money is granted from us to other entities, as well as some of the projects that we do ourselves. The outcomes tracking system is a database that allows us not only to collect data about the projects getting done, but then produce reports on the outcomes that we're achieving. And finally, we have our budgeting for results, which really is a summary of the outcomes we're achieving, the budgets that you all are providing, what we're getting, what Minnesotans are getting for the money is essentially what that is. So this is our framework. We use an iterative process as we think of how to implement conservation, identify the problem, identify strategies, implement the strategies, evaluate the impact, and then go back into that system again. So we're a very outcome-based organization, have been for a long time, and believe that that's the best way to show Minnesotans what we're accomplishing with their dollars.
Mr. Lenwin, can you hold on a second? I'd like to encourage our member, if you have any question, I'd like to kind of keep the nature of how Senator Thomas Sony will hold it. If we'll hold this meeting, if you, any of you have questions, feel free to just jump in. And not that he's here, but I like to conduct a similar way as well. So, yep. So, Senator Engelbrecht.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And Commissioner, thanks for being here today. Going back to the legacy grants funded, every year we have a legislative audit, it seems like, or not every year, but nearly every year, of the legacy funding. And can you comment real quickly on the one that's probably the one that does most of the funding, not all, but most of the funding is the Outdoor Lasard Sam's Outdoor Heritage Committee. And always we're asked the question about supplanting versus supplemental. And is that still on your radar? And give the committee your thoughts on that comment every year that we get.
Mr. Chairman, seems
to be the only one, but yeah.
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, thank you very much for that question, Senator Ingebrigtsen. The members will remember that in 2008 the voters passed the legacy amendment, and the language in the Constitution identifies four uses for that money. One is arts and cultural heritage, one is parks and trails, one is the Outdoor Heritage Fund, and one is clean water. They are all distributed differently. The Outdoor Heritage Fund that you're asking about specifically, Senator Ingebrigtsen, is generates roughly $100 million a year, and there is the Lasard Sam's Outdoor Heritage Council established in statute that makes recommendations to the legislature on how those dollars should be spent. They go through a request for proposal process. They solicit proposals from any eligible entity. They look at the technical merits of those proposals. They make a recommendation on those proposals based on the cost and the dollars available. That comes before you all for consideration, and then when those are approved, the money is generally appropriated to the Department of Natural Resources for distribution via grants to the entities. Now, I would concur that for some reason that generates a lot of audit interest, much more so than I've seen in any other funding source, quite frankly. But that's good. I mean, this is good because we want the voters to know that the trust they bestowed upon the state in 2008 is warranted. And recall what 2008 looked like. We were at the bottom of the financial crisis. The mortgage situation was deteriorating. Unemployment was skyrocketing. And yet 61% of voters approved that amendment. So it is an indication, A, of their desire to sustain this natural resources, but B, I think as well, an indication of their interest in the agencies, executive branch, and the partners moving ahead with projects. One of the constitutional provisions says that the money shall supplement and not substitute for traditional sources of funding. I'll digress for a second and mention that the other constitutional funding is the Environment and Natural Resources Trust Fund, which is also a constitutionally established fund, but the language it says shall supplement, not supplant, is statutory. So there's a distinction between the two funds. One is a statutory requirement that it not be supplanting. The other is a constitutional requirement that it not be supplanting. So the constitutional requirement for the Outdoor Heritage Fund is that we not supplant funds that we were for projects we were traditionally doing with other funds with the new Outdoor Heritage Fund. Now, as long-time members will recognize, that's extraordinarily difficult to do. When is it supplanting and when is it adding and everything else? In order for us to be very clear about what that means in the department, I just signed a commissioner's order. It's an operational order. It applies to just the department. It transcends the commissioner's administration. It's a guidance document to our staff on the parameters of the use of all the dedicated funds, the trust fund as well as the four under the legacy fund, so that we are conscious of the conditions that the funds are provided for, so that we are tracking and reporting the way we should, so we are advising the public on the projects that are being done, and especially so that we are aware that we are not supplanting, so that staff at every level know what supplanting looks like and are aware that they are not, you know, they are not authorized to do that. So it is something we take very seriously. It is something we have now sort of codified in our internal operating procedures, and I'm optimistic that that will ensure that that won't happen.
Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Yep. You may go on, sir.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, so I want to talk very briefly about our priorities for the 14 and 15 budget. And, of course, these reflect the governor's priorities. We have three main priorities in establishing our budget. One is we want to grow the economy. Two is we want to be responsible. We want to help resolve the budget situation. And third is we want to look for continuous improvement in how the department can be implementing programs as efficiently as possible. This is just a brief summary of agency expenditures for the last 12 years. Two things I want to point out with this. One is that, as you can see over time, the agency budget has increased from roughly $250 million per year. This is an annual basis to about $425 million during that period of time. The second point I want to make here is that when you look at the general fund level, which is the blue bar at the bottom of each of these, or the blue part of each of the bottoms of these bars, that has declined significantly from somewhere in the range of $120 million to about $60 million a year. So our general fund contribution has declined both in real dollars as well as percent of budget steadily for that period of time. The increase that you see in those bars is a result of either dedicated funds that the department has some control over, such as hunting and fishing license fees, snowmobile registration fees, and so on. Those have increased over time as the legislature has given authority to increase those fees. But most significantly, as you'll see from essentially from 2009 until 2012, the big jump in funds has been a result of the legacy amendment. So the department does get funds directly through the appropriations process for clean water fund activities. We do get funds directly through the appropriations process, directly for parks and trails activities, and we apply for and are successful in receiving grants under the Outdoor Heritage Fund through the Sauter Sam's Outdoor Heritage Council. We apply for those funds on a project basis, just like other entities that receive funds. Okay.
Take a breath, Commissioner. Senator Saxok.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. So from fiscal year 01 to fiscal year 12, we've had about, in the general fund, about a third of the expenditure. Is that
historically it was almost 50% of our budget, and in the recent couple of years it's been 18 to 20% of our budget.
And Commissioner, so tell us again what's included generally in general fund expenditures. What types of things are taken out of general fund?
Well, because of the decline in general fund over time, we've really restricted the programs with the general fund is going into now. And currently, it goes to fund parts of the Division of Forestry, parts of the Division of Ecological and Water Resources, and parts of the Division of Parks and Trails. So the roughly $60 million we received is going primarily into those three divisions. There's almost no general fund activity in any of the other divisions.
And Mr. Chair, Commissioner, those three ecological services, state parks, and forestry, is this a major part of their budget, the general fund?
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, yes, it's a major part of the budget.
About how much? Is it half their budget or...?
I'm going to have to look for some help on that, Senator. I believe it is roughly a third of the budgets for each of them. And Mr. Chair, members of the committee, I'm reminded that we also have open appropriations from the general fund that are more or less either passed through in the case of tilt or tribal treaty payments or for fire suppression. When we have a fire season, the legislature has granted us an appropriation so we can just go out and deal with the fire. So we do have those general funds as well.
Senator Ingebrigtsen.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Thank you. Two questions. You just brought up I don't know what we'd call it. Not a nasty word, but the word PILT. And PILT has been changed over the years from this committee, I think, and I might stand corrected, but that's now in the tax committee?
Correct.
Is that correct?
Yes.
But you're still paying into the tax, by way of your funding on those dollars into the tax committee so they can disperse it out properly. Is that correct?
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, the obligation for the payment in lieu of taxes or PILT comes through the department's budget. So that does show up as a general fund obligation here. The funds are distributed to the counties through the Department of Revenue. And I don't know. I think your question is, do we have a discussion about the PILT revenue in this committee or taxes, Senator? And I don't know the answer to that.
And my follow-up question. Thank you, Mr. Chair, and thank you, Commissioner, for that. You're right. I know it gets involved in the Lessard stuff an awful lot. But my next question is, and it's kind of off of what Senator Saxog was talking about, your expenditures here. Have seen a decrease. Talk to me about the revenues with fees. Has that increased or decreased over the last 10 years? Or is that someplace in here that you're coming to? I'm sorry.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, no, there is no additional detail in about the history of the funds here, Senator Ingebrigtsen, for the dedicated funds. Of course, the most recent fee that we had before the legislature was the hunting and fishing fees, which were increased last year for the first time in a decade. That game and fish fund is a very large part of our overall budget. It's somewhere in the range of 25 to 30% of our overall budget. So it is a large component of that. So when we see an increase like that, it has a big impact on the department. many of our other fees, Senator Richardson, I can't tell you when they were last increased or what the increase was. Some of it is, for instance, through when the gas tax is increased, we get a percentage of the gas tax, and that's increased automatically, even though it isn't a departmental initiative. But I couldn't tell you over the last 10 years which other fees have been increased, and I can surely get you that information if you'd like.
Thank you.
And in fairness, I guess I would like that information. When you're showing this blue scale here where we're actually dropping general fund dollars, we all understand that, that the DNR has been moving away from general fund over the years. I would also like to see what the fees have increased to offset that. I think in fairness to everybody in the committee, we should have that information. So I can get that from you later. Thanks.
I'll do that, Senator. Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, if there's no further questions on this, I'll continue.
Does everybody have a spreadsheet like this from the DNR?
No, that's from,
that's from you.
Oh, you don't get that.
Secret.
Maybe we should have one of these handed out. We'll eventually get everybody one of these then, okay? Senator Scoy, you want to enlighten us on the PILT? It's in the Tax Committee now, right?
Well, the PILT authorization is in the Tax Committee, but it is the general fund money. And I just said to Senator Saxhog, I asked him, I said, well, why is that flowing through the DNR's budget? But beyond that, I don't know. It was a number of years ago that the Tax Committee took the authority for PILT. But I understand that this year in the House of Representatives, it's returned to the Environment and Natural Resources Committee. Commissioner, do you know that?
Senator, I'm sorry, I didn't understand the question.
I'm sorry, I'm not speaking up.
Go ahead.
Did PILT return to the Natural Environment Finance Division in the House this year for the first time in a couple of years?
It's an expenditure.
It did.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, apparently it did.
Okay, so that's a good question, though, Senator Scoy. If the jurisdiction is in the Tax Committee and the money comes from the Department of Revenue, why do you get the PILT money?
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, we have been trying to get that off of our revenue expenditures sheet for a long time.
We could probably do that. Senator Ingebrecht.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And I hated to open up a bee's nest here, but there was a study done, I think Senator Scoyer can correct me if I'm wrong, but by December of last year, I think that study's out. It's about thick. I'm going to go through it tonight, actually.
Good.
But anyhow, the PILT thing always comes up from the Lessard Sam's Outdoor Heritage acquisition, but that study should hopefully show something, and their recommendations. And I don't know if they're recommending it to come back here or not. I guess I don't.
Senator Scoy,
haven't got to that chapter yet.
Well, Madam Chair, Senator Ingebrigtsen, we just heard that report in the Tax Reform Division this morning, and so we just had the full report from the DNR this morning in the division on it, and
okay. They
have some recommendations. They also had some recommendations that didn't come forward out of the commission because they had costs associated with them, but we're asking to review those recommendations also. So Senator Saxhog has a bill, and we're taking a look at a number of these provisions.
Senator Saxhog.
Mr. Chair, if you're done with PILT,
back
and you may cover this later, Commissioner, but so I'm still on this general fund and the trend line from the turn of the century to fiscal year 12, which I'm not exactly sure what the exact number is. So with the governor's recommendations for the budget, what does that look like for this coming biennium?
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, the governor's governor's budget would be a $6 million increase in general fund and a $2 million reallocation within the existing budget of general fund dollars, so it's and that's on an annual basis. So it's the first increase in general fund we've had in that period of time.
Is that, Mr. Chair? So when you say $6 million in general fund and then and $2 million reallocation, what do you mean by reallocation?
Well, Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, you'll see that when the Division of Lands and Minerals makes its presentation, but we're taking $2 million that is currently coming from the general fund to the Division of Lands and Minerals to do real estate transactions and to do certain activities related to the mining, the Drill Corps Library, and other things. And moving that into other priorities within the department, then those expenses that would have been covered are going to be recovered by internal billing for the real estate transactions or by assessing a fee for use of the some of the minerals drill core library and other activities.
And, thank you.
Why are we doing that? Commissioner?
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, we believe it's one of the things that we're trying to do in our budget is what we call full cost accounting. So real estate transactions, we believe, ought to be paid for by the division that is doing the real estate transaction. So if the Division of Forestry is doing a land swap or a road sale or lease easement sale, Division of Forestry ought to be paying the Division of Lands and Minerals for those real estate transaction expenses.
Well, I'm thinking about targeting the drill core library because it seems to me that we probably have unprecedented drilling going on in the northeastern Minnesota, probably in the history of the state right now. And I would think that all those drill cores are going to the drill core library for cataloging. And so cutting the budget seems to be an inopportune time to do it. So I'm not sure why that's being targeted. I mean, you may want to ship something else from somewhere else because I think you might need it there eventually.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, I couldn't agree more that there's outstanding opportunities now in northeast Minnesota with respect to mining. What we're proposing to do is rather than the general fund pay for the maintenance of the drill core library, for instance, assess the users of the library for that service.
That we've never done before?
It was not, Mr. Chair.
Have we heard from the users?
There's some questions one doesn't have to ask to know the answer.
Okay. All right. Any other questions before we go on? Okay, Commissioner, continue.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, several critical trends, we've gotten into them a little bit, that I want to highlight is that over time we have shifted from general fund to dedicated funds for many of the department's activities. The challenge we face with that is that these dedicated funds are less flexible, even though they are more stable. And I want to give two examples. So, for instance, hunting and fishing fees, you know, they're dedicated. They can be used for hunting and fishing activities, but there are certain activities that they can't be used for. So I can't do forestry projects, for instance, with hunting and fishing fees, and I'm not proposing to. Or snowmobile registration fees. I can't use those fees to pay for water accesses. So the challenge becomes one that because they are dedicated, while they are stable, they have a very narrow band of use, and it doesn't help us when general fund dollars go away because we can't replace those with these dedicated fund dollars. So the dedicated funding is really driving the work that we can do. The fact that we've got funds in this area means we do that work and maybe don't do some other work. And just an editorial comment, if I could, on that, Mr. Chair. Much of the work that is now being done by the general fund is really work that benefits all Minnesotans. There isn't something that you can go and assess a fee against somebody for managing our wetlands or managing the water quantity in the groundwater because there's not an individual user. There's not an individual fee that we can assess to keep our forests healthy. It's challenging to make our parks accessible if we have to assess all the fees for maintaining those parks to the people who are using them. So the idea of using general fund for some of the department's activities, I think, has got strong merit because we are providing, you know, benefits to all Minnesotans and not to a discrete user group that we can assess a fee to. So that's one of the challenges that we've had, that we've been facing in the past decade. Following on that, the second critical trend, is, as we mentioned already, is that the general fund activities now fall in three divisions, and the other divisions are relying primarily on dedicated funding. So while they're particularly stable, it leaves us with a major challenge in those divisions that are general funded, forestry, parks and trails, and ecological and water resources. Again, since those are providing benefits for all Minnesotans, as we squeeze those budgets, we're really limiting the opportunities we have to provide those benefits for Minnesotans. So we have done some, for instance, revisiting of the opportunities we can provide at state parks and trails and revising timelines when facilities might be open or available because we simply don't have the operating revenue to continue those 24/7 access hours. The second bullet there with respect to the general fund is that the open appropriations have been increasing over the decade, currently roughly representing approximately half of DNR's total general fund in 2012. Part of the reason those have been increasing is because of the payment in lieu of taxes component of that. Payment in lieu of taxes was adjusted, the payment rate was adjusted by the legislature, I believe it was roughly 15 years ago, such that every 5 years there, the payment is reviewed and revised upward. And so when you see the change in our payment of tax payments over the years, there have been some serious increases over the last 15 years. So that, right now, that is a half of our general fund appropriation. So when we look at the general fund amount coming to the department, a big part of that is the open appropriations. The game and fish fund, relatively stable over time in terms of the number of licenses sold and the dollars that that brings in, but because of the fact that we didn't have a license increase for more than a decade, the buying power of that went down substantially. Next month in March, the licenses will actually increase. We'll start seeing that revenue coming into the department very shortly after that. So we will have a one-time opportunity now to look at additional expenditures for the from the Game and Fish Fund. We'll talk a little bit about that when we talk about our initiatives. Legacy funds, again, we get them from several sources, the Clean Water, the Parks and Trails, and the Outdoor Heritage Fund in particular. They are truly responsible for increasing the amount of work we can do in a number of areas and have been since 2010. Much of what we get from the funds is pass-through money. So, for instance, the Outdoor Heritage Fund money that's allocated to the nonprofits is provided to the department, which then subgrants it out. So much of what you'll see in our budget, in our past budgets has been dollars that were appropriated to the department for subsequent pass-through to other entities.
And Commissioner, when you pass them through, does the department participate in those projects, or are the nonprofits that you give them to, do they do all the work, or how does that, depending upon the project, I would imagine, but.
Mr. Chairman and members of the committee, exactly. For many of the projects, the nonprofit will do the work completely, and the department doesn't have a big role in participating in that. But there are some where we are a partner. So, for instance, Pheasants Forever receives some money to purchase some land. It comes back to the state as a wildlife management area. So we have some systems in place to ensure that the parcels that they're interested in are also parcels we're interested in. And there's some language
and so
in the appropriation.
In a case like that, is the department the beneficiary of part of the funds, or is the department just use its own funds to cooperate with Pheasants Forever?
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, we do get a small appropriation for administering the grants, but typically, in the example I just gave, we don't get a direct appropriation for doing anything with that property after it's received.
And I should point out, after your conversation with Senator Ingebrigtsen, that the word supplant isn't used anywhere in language, right? It's supplement and substitute, isn't it?
Correct. In the constitutional language, it's which is different than the Environment and Natural Resources Trust Fund, Mr. Chairman, which does use the word supplant.
Which does use supplant. Okay. Right. All right. Do they mean the same thing?
Mr. Chair, I know your name's not
Webster, so I
refer
guess
that to the chief counsel there, who probably developed both words, actually. So we'll ask him.
Senator Ingebrigtsen.
Ask Jim Nobles, he'll tell you.
Yeah, okay. Commissioner, go ahead.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, the last observation I'd make, the last bullet there is Environment and Natural Resources Trust Fund. Last biennium, there was an $8.3 million one-time appropriation into the department's budget for certain activities with respect to invasive species and parks and trails operations primarily that, of course, goes away at the end of this biennium. So the one-time nature of that left us with a operating hole as we start this biennial budget.
Members, I'm passing out the spreadsheet, and I'm not sure if we've taken a look at this in the full committee once already, so Mr. Mueller, I guess, has already explained this to you one time, but go very quickly and just let everybody know what this is.
Mr. Chairman and members, this spreadsheet that's being passed out is just the general fund recommendations of the governor for all the agencies in this area. I guess right now we'll just look at what the DNR is proposing. That's on lines 15 through 28 on this spreadsheet. You can see the The first set of columns is the forecast for 14-15. Second set is the tails. Then we get to the governor's budget. And if you look at that gray column that says governor minus forecast, there you'll see the general fund changes by division for the DNR. So DNR is showing a little over a $4 million savings in the lands and minerals, and they'll go through that when they're going through their budget. About $7.5 million general fund increase in eco and waters, $4 million increase in forestry, a $4.5 million increase in parks and trails, and a little bit of savings in fish and wildlife. And so it's about $11.58 million general fund increase for the biennium. And this does not, the numbers here, the $158 million of spending here does not include PILT on my tracking because we're showing that the tax committee is tracking that as far as the Senate goes. And you might want to keep the spreadsheet in your save file, in your folders, for as we go through other agencies and put together the budget.
Senator Ingebrigtsen.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and thank you for that.
We are the Environment and Natural Resource Committee. We do have logging in here, so you may want to throw these papers away so that we can make more paper.
Oh, I don't know. question I have, Mr. Chair, is where on here does the, under the purview of the commissioner, does it show the FTEs for increase? Do you have that someplace? I tried to find it in here.
Mr. Chairman, Senator Ingebrigtsen, it is in the budget books, and I'll find the page where it is, where the FTEs are proposed by agency within the DNR's budget, and I'll find the page, but it does show the governor's changes for FTEs.
Could you just get back to me with the totals?
Yes.
I'm going to have to leave a little early. So.
Okay.
Thank you.
Okay, Commissioner, go ahead.
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, I'm looking at the FY14-15 budget overview. The pie charts you've got in front of you now reflect a biennial amount, not the annual amount that I was talking about before. So you see the governor's recommendation is for $772 million biennial amount. That is in that budget, roughly 15% is general fund. The remaining is, funds are primarily dedicated funds, including the Game and Fish Fund, Legacy Fund, Natural Resources Fund. FY14-15 budget includes the governor's recommendation of an additional $12 million of general fund over the biennium, $6 million a year, the reallocation of $4 million over the biennium, and new spending of $8 million from the increased funding from the Game and Fish Fund as a result of a license fee increase. The governor's rec does not include the Outdoor Heritage Funds or the Environmental Trust Funds, which, again, we won't know what those are until the process of project selection is completed. Last point I'd make, Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, is that the previous budget, as I mentioned, had a reallocation of Environment Natural Resource Trust Fund and some other one-time funding that was essentially a $20 million biennial amount. And so this budget attempts to fill that hole with some of the new funding the governor's budget recommends. So this is, on the left is the governor's budget by fund, source of the funds, and on the right is the proposed expenditure by program for the $772 million budget.
Senator Scoy.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And Commissioner, would this be an appropriate time to ask about the AIS initiative from the DNR and with regard to the budget overview? Could you,
Mr. Chairman,
walk
members
me through a little bit of that and what you're thinking on going on with regard to that?
You bet. Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, the last biennium we received, I believe, was $8.6 million of one-time funding for the biennium for aquatic invasive species management. We have an existing surcharge on boats. It's $5 per boat for a three-year license that I believe provides in the neighborhood of $8 million, $7 million per biennium for aquatic invasive species. So in combination, we had a biennial total of about $16 million for aquatic invasive species control. As a result of that increased funding, we greatly ramped up our aquatic invasive species program. The one-time funding, of course, means that at the end of this biennium, we're back down to the amount of revenue that we have from the $5 surcharge. So the governor's budget has in it $7.5 million over 2 years of new general fund spending to plug that hole in the aquatic invasive species effort.
And so, Mr. Chair, so your budget for AIS will be comparable, but you'll have ongoing general fund money? Did I gather that?
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, the total amount available will decline somewhat. I believe it's in the neighborhood of $500,000 a year, but it does become, by virtue of being general fund, it does then become part of our base funding.
Thank you, Commissioner.
Senator
Sachs. Thank you, Mr. Chair. And Commissioner, the bottom bullet there talks about the governor's recommendations include $12 million in general fund to help address budget hole for one-time funding and decreased timber receipts. The decreased timber receipts, is that based on the fact that the value of timber was less or that we harvested less timber?
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, it really is a function of both. And if I could just give a high-level overview of the forestry budget, there are really two sources of revenue for the forestry budget. One is general fund, which historically was the primary source of funding, but as the general fund diminished, we had the wise idea, well, just give us a part of the proceeds from the sale of timber, because that was, at the time, that was increasing, and so it seemed like a good place to go for money. Well, 2008, of course, the housing market collapsed, the paper market collapsed, and the value of timber dropped dramatically. So the pinch that we got into is that we had less general fund money, we had declining receipts from the stumpage, what we call the forest management investment account, and so we began cutting back programs. So today I believe we're sitting at about 90 vacancies in our Division of Forestry. The most recent cause of the decline is for three reasons. One is we are selling less timber by virtue of being able to put up less. Two is that the value of the timber has decreased. So once upon a time, aspen was going for $60 to $80 a cord. I think our most recent sale is in the neighborhood of $30 to $35 a cord. And third, recall the last 2 years, we had significant blowdowns, timber blowdowns. And it was imperative that we sell that timber, salvage that timber as soon as possible, A, because it has more value, B, because we don't want to create a fire situation. But when we are selling blowdown timber, we're getting 30 cents on the dollar. So we made it a priority to cut that timber. We essentially took a loss on the sale of that timber because of the cost of because of the reduced value of that timber. And so it was just a double whammy of driving that forest management investment account down.
Senator Saxon.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And Commissioner, I understand that part, but when we're talking about coming into the next biennium, and I cheated and looked ahead here and saw that you're planning on cutting between 600,000 and 650,000 cords. First of all, that'd be devastating, or is devastating, for the forest industry, when because we count on state wood. But I mean, which comes first, the chicken or the egg here? I mean, if you at one point a million cords was our goal, we really didn't ever do it, but that's okay. At least we kept shooting for it and ended up somewhere around 800,000 cords. And this is kind of a dramatic cut. Do we have any reaction to that?
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, absolutely, and I very much appreciate that concern. 800,000 cords is the number that I think has been a target for a number of years, and that's the level we would surely like to be at. I think there are probably at least two reasons why, you know, we're looking at a reduced amount. One is simply the ability to get out and put up sales and, you know, get timber to market. But the other is also one of silviculture, is that when we look at our goals for age structure across the state as dictated by our subsection forest resource management plans, we have a problem where I will offer a matter of discussion among the industry and us, but we have a situation where we have an inadequate number of trees at a certain age class that requires us for a period of years to cut less in order to get to the age class distribution we want, right? So even if we had the staff, we may not still be able to get to 800,000 cords without impairing our ability in the future. It's like, you know, cut me now or cut me later. And if we cut now, it will impair our ability to provide that timber in the future. Now, I'd offer a couple of other thoughts, and that is we are, as you know, Senator Sacksock, very interested in maintaining a strong forest products industry in Minnesota. We need the forest products industry to sustain the health of the state assets. And, of course, the timber industry depends on state timber for anywhere between 30% and 50% of their wood. So we have this interdependent relationship. There are a number of sort of administrative hurdles that have been put in place over the years as well that we're trying to address to make sure that, you know, if we can meet the biology, we don't have the administrative hurdles in a way that reduce our ability to put timber on the market. The best example I can give you of that is we've got a policy that relates to the certification of timber that we call extended rotation forestry. So there's, by virtue of our being certified, we're required to have meet certain environmental standards. One of those is that we have to ensure that there's a percentage of our timber out there that is beyond commercial age. So say, for example's sake, 15% of our timber has to be beyond the normal commercial rotation. And that policy is established in our subsection forest resource management plans and has been implemented for almost a decade now. We heard from the industry and we heard from the university that our implementation of extended rotation forestry was more aggressive than needed to be. So, and as a result, there were more old trees out there than what was necessary to meet our certification standards. We went and revisited that policy. We brought in industry. We brought in the environmental community. We looked at the relationship between state lands and private and other government lands and concluded that, you know, we could change that policy. And so we did, so that more timber now would be available by virtue of reducing that proportion of stands that need to be kept in old age. So we're looking at administrative ways that we can maximize the amount of timber we can put out there without doing environmental damage. And that's one. In Chapter 90 revision, which relates to timber sales, is another one that we're looking at refining. We'll have some policy initiatives around that to make sure that we're able to sell the wood as expeditiously as possible.
And Mr. Chair and Commissioner, and I, you know, I agree, and you and I know what you're talking about, but when it gets down to the nitty-gritty here, and we're talking about 150 or 200,000 cords, which are going to be very important for our future, you know, what are we talking about in terms of additional budget dollars, general fund dollars, to get us to that point where we could get back to our goal? Now, given the fact, I understand there's a hole in the, you know, in the age of Popple, and I understand what you're talking about, but how much are we short, really, to get the job done?
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, I might defer that question to Forrest Bull for later on, but by way of a couple of examples, we have about 80 vacancies, and I'm not solid on the number from what has been our historical high in the Division of Forestry. One aggressive forester can put up about 10,000 cords of wood a year. One aggressive forester costs about $100,000 a year. So you get, you know, one cord for about $10. So, you know, 150,000 more cords, you know, the math would suggest $1.5 million. But that is really back of the napkin mathematics, Senator Sacksock, I would offer.
Probably,
so I'd rather prefer.
It's probably as accurate as a lot of the others. So, Commissioner, what happened to those 90 people? Where'd they go? Because it seems to me we'd have to hire them back, right?
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, a lot of those vacancies were just attrition. People retired. We had a couple of initiatives to incentivize retirement, and so we just had a lot of retirements.
And will they come back?
Those particular people will not. If the funding is available to fill the positions, we would absolutely hire again.
And do you can you contract out with the private sector to get done what Senator Sacksock wants you to do?
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, I don't know to what extent we can do that. I think we do some of that, but my suspicion is that contracting something as technical as that will require almost as much oversight as you would have to provide to just do the sale independently.
And do we have the manpower available within the department, or can we hire within the department to get the manpower that we need to get out the extra 150,000 cords?
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, it would have to be new people coming in.
New people, but can you find them?
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, I believe we could, absolutely.
Senator Scoie.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chair and Commissioner. With regard to the blowdown, I'm going to speculate that I'm probably the only person in this room that's ever logged blowdown timber. The other thing that occurs is your yield per acre goes down significantly.
Are you a logger, too?
I was, yeah. That was what my father did for 70 years.
Oh, yeah?
So anyway, I'm pretty familiar with that. But with regard to the age classification, I don't think we need to go into it much more today, but maybe Mr. Bowl would be able to provide me some information. My understanding of the age classification issue on Aspen is back in the 90s, we were looking at a gap where there was going to be a time period where we weren't going to have mature trees to log. But I think with the time that has passed and the economic downturn and the closing of a number of these mills, we're actually to the point now where we have a lot of old aspen that we're just not going to get to. And some of that's just going to fall down because there's younger trees that people are going to go off and log. So maybe if the forestry folks would want to provide some information to the committee on the actual age classification status of the aspen to see if that 600,000 number is good or if we should be looking at a higher number like Senator Staxog has been talking about.
And
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, we'll pull some of that information together. And I would hasten to add as well, while we are obliged to ensure that we have old forests in Minnesota, one of the conclusions we have come to in our extended rotation forestry discussion is that there is enough out there on other lands that the state doesn't necessarily need to provide that. One of the challenges with old trees is that when you look at the mills we have in Minnesota, they produce high-quality white paper. When you get old aspen, you get a lot of rot and you get discoloration in that wood. They can't use that. So we have, you know, one or two industries in the state that will use the old wood. So we very much do want to provide that 30 to 40 to 50-year-old aspen that the industry wants.
And to that, sorry. Thank you, Ms. Chair. And, you know, Commissioner, to that point, I think it's really important that we figure out how we're going to try to find a mechanism to bring some of this forest products industry back to the state that has left. And part of it is to utilize some of that wood. And just an observation, and I don't know, you don't even have to respond, but I think that one of the ways that the state would achieve that is if we could demonstrate that we weren't going to go through these spikes in extremely high stumpage prices like we had as we went through. And, you know, I attended meetings during that time period when the mill folks were there, and they were telling us that, you know, if we get a little hiccup in the housing market, the first mill that's going to get closed for our company is going to be the mill in Minnesota because of the high procurement costs. So if we want to recruit these folks back, we need to figure out a better mechanism to sell timber so that we can assure that we don't go through that at extremely high prices again. And I don't have an answer for it, and, you know, but I think it's something that we should be looking at as a committee and in conjunction with the DNR to see if there's some improvements that could be made there.
Thank you. You didn't have to comment, but if you want to, go ahead.
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, I'd only comment that anything we can do to support, you know, a strong industry in Minnesota is something we want to do. Our trees are sold essentially at auction, and right now, because private landowners still have stars in their eyes about the values of the trees, ours are the ones that people are buying. And as a result of the fact that we go at auction, it's the highest bidder that gets them. Ours may also be the first to rise because private landowners sort of follow the market and see what happens after the fact. So it could be that there might be some way to take the peaks and valleys off of that pricing. I don't have an idea for what that might be right now. But to your first point as well, Senator, we are very interested in looking for additional markets for wood, and in particular old wood. And one of the very exciting things that's kind of moving along right now is the city of Grand Marais is looking at the possibility of a district heating enterprise where they could use biomass to provide district heating, and we're working closely with them on putting together some proposals that might end up with us being able to provide them with timber for heating the city, which would be a really fortuitous outcome.
Just briefly, Mr. Chair, thank you. And Commissioner, you know, we talked about silviculture and the importance of that. You know, one of the important outcomes of silviculture is that you have trees that you need to have a mill to deliver them to. And so, you know, this trying to bring some of these forest products mills back to the state would be important in that area also.
Absolutely.
Senator Saxon.
And thank you, Mr. Chair and Commissioner. And those are important things, whether it's district heating or cellulosic biofuels or uses for older timber, and that's going to be important to us. But we still got to have the people to pull that stuff out of the woods and manage it. So that's our number one problem, yeah.
Thank you very much for that.
And we do have some district heating on both in Hibbing and Virginia at the PUCs at the biomass. And in fact, I think one year back in 2008 or 2009, we were supplementing them through the IRRRB for Roundwood, actually, because the loggers couldn't find any market for their wood. And so it's pretty, well, you've been there, it's a pretty impressive yard where they bring in the biomass. And I think it's something like 28 trucks a day with that are like 32 tons of material. Does that sound right? Or it's the other way around, 28 tons of material with 32 trucks. But it's a big number. And so what I wanted to ask is this mostly is coming from slash as far as I know. Have you been seeing that pick up at all as far as the industry is concerned?
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, I might not be the best person to ask, but most of the mills generate some of their own heat with their own slash and chips and sawdust. Some, I believe, it's Potlatch and Bemidji, and Senator Scoy may know this, actually ship to Boise some of the sawdust and chips that they generate because they don't have the use for it, but Boise can. So there is actually a market in some of this existing biomass. I should mention as well, Ely is also considering something like this. I think to a forester, the thought of burning a good tree is probably pretty repulsive. So a lot of what's been done to date is just with the slash and with the chips and with the leftover limbs and so on. But I think as we look, especially in areas where there isn't a lot of demand and we have old trees that aren't very valuable for paper, biomass might be a very good option to pursue.
Okay, any other questions on this particular slide? Are you done with that slide, or are you?
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, the next thing I talk about very briefly is just some of the initiatives, the five initiatives that we've got going forward with respect to increase funding, new funding, different divisions of the department. These will be covered in more detail in the division reports, so I'm only going to mention them, but these are the areas where we're proposing new spending. First is investments in forest management, very timely for our recent discussion. Second is some additional investments in parks and trails operations and customer service. Third is, we mentioned previously, the investment in managing aquatic invasive species. Fourth, as a result of the game and fish fee increase, we're able to look at some additional habitat and population work in Division of Fish and Wildlife. And finally, we've got those general fund adjustments that I mentioned with respect to the reallocation of existing general fund. And, Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, this is a summary of what that general fund adjustment looks like. So this is $2.2 million per year, $4.4 million for the biennium. That's a 5% of our total direct general fund appropriation being redirected. It is coming from three sources. Real estate services, I mentioned, we will now be doing internal billing to cover that rather than providing that with general fund. We are restructuring the hours of operation at the Drill Corps Library to make it a more efficient use of time. And third is we're eliminating the last $200,000 per year of general fund going to Division of Fish and Wildlife or prairie and wetland work, and we'll be picking up that work with other dollars.
Not to belabor a point here, but I happen to know that the DNR office is right here in Hibbing and the Drill Corps Library is right here. So what kind of time are you saving here? Is that use your time more? I mean, are there two or three people working in the Drill Corps Library full-time now, or are they over in the office and then they move over there when you need them?
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, I might defer that question to Jess Richards, but we do have a presence in the building, whether it's one person or two, I don't know, but it is a facility that's used roughly twice a week on average, and what we're proposing is that it's probably workable for industry to know that, say, on Tuesday we're open and on Thursday we're open, rather than be open 5 days a week.
And are we putting solar panels there?
Mr. Chairman,
that may be in the bill.
I'm hoping in the future we will be.
Senator Dietzick.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I don't know if this is the appropriate time. I had a question on this project and potential fees here, and so I don't know if now is the time to ask
it.
So it's my understanding that one of the proposals to maybe get money and to replace money and to do some fees on this Drill Corps Library is to actually charge the users. And so one of the questions I had was, because it was either like, you know, an amount per year, so $1,000 or $5,000 per year for a user so that they'd have continual access throughout the year, or like a $250 one-time issue. And one of the questions I had, so if I am a user, if I'm, you know, Dietzick Engineering, Dietzick, you know, Construction, and I buy that $5,000, you know, or whatever yearly amount is, can I continually use that throughout the year so my clients don't have to use it or have to get an additional fee? Or how are you going to do that for, you know, either law firms, can they, you know, buy it, or is that how they're going to start attracting clients? So it was just kind of an actual, and I don't need an answer now, but it's just something to think about.
Well, let's see what you got in mind. What do you got in mind? Because that is an interesting question. So if you got something in mind, Commissioner, let us know.
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, at least on the fee end of it, and I might again have to defer on somebody who knows more specifically, our use fee would be $250 a day or $5,000 a year. And that would generate roughly $105,000 a year that would allow us to maintain reduced operating hours for the Drill Corps Library. So if you are an exploration company that intends on using the Drill Corps Library a lot, the $5,000 fee would be, you know, for the whole year.
Senator Dietzick.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. If you're a company, I understand it, but let's say you are a consulting firm. Can you use it for every single different client you have, or is it going to be a separate fee per client? I mean, I'm saying this because if I'm a consulting company, or if I'm different companies that maybe just have one-time thing, I'll go to the consulting company so I don't have to pay that fee as a way to get around paying the fee. So I'm just putting it out there to consider.
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, great thought. You know, honestly, we haven't gone that far into thinking about how the system might be used or worked, and that certainly would be one of them, but I would presume that an individual entity would be assessed the fee unless we start seeing something like that happening.
Senator Dietzick may be in charge of the Drill Corps Library Subcommittee. Go ahead, Commissioner.
Mr. Chairman, I'd just offer one last thought on the Drill Corps Library. It is an outstanding asset for the state of Minnesota. We've got almost 100 years of drill corps there. It's a huge building, and it's just tremendously important for the industry. It's tremendously important for the state of Minnesota. Every time a company drills a core for exploration, they have to provide part of that to the state of Minnesota. So we have got hundreds and hundreds and thousands of drill cores in the library, and I would invite you all to take a look at it at some point.
And they're not just from the Iron Range. They're from all over the state.
Absolutely. Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, that's the end of my presentation. At this point in time, I'd offer that Deputy Commissioner Dave Shad will come up and walk through the divisions, Mr. Chairman, as you see appropriate. And I would stand for any questions.
Any questions? Are you going to sit there or are you going to leave?
Mr. Chairman, I'm due to our previous schedule, I missed lunch, so I might just step out and grab
feeling,
my sandwich.
I know
sandwich.
That feeling, Commissioner. Are you going to have carp for lunch, or what are you going
to do? I have that for breakfast, Mr. Chairman.
Okay. Okay, thank you, Commissioner. Any questions of the Commissioner before he leaves? Okay, thank you very much.
Thank you very much.
Welcome.
Good afternoon, Mr. Chairman. For the record, Dave Shad, Deputy Commissioner at DNR, and I also have not eaten lunch, but I will stay with you this afternoon. So,
do you have any deputy assistant commissioners in the DNR?
We've got, Mr. Chairman, one deputy and then three additional assistant commissioners.
But are there any deputy assistants?
No. I do all the deputy work
myself. There was a deputy assistant commissioner in the Health and Human Services testimony yesterday, and I thought that was kind of – I didn't know what a deputy assistant was because I thought a deputy would be the assistant of already. But anyway, go ahead. Sorry.
Okay. We've got seven separate presentations here by each one of our division directors. We'll try to move through these fairly quickly. Each presentation will include a brief description of that division's work. Look at the 13-year budget trend, as the commissioner showed, for the entire department. You'll get a look at that at the division level, and then an overview of our proposed fiscal year 14-15 budget and a description of any change items included in that budget. So first up, we've got Jess Richards. He's director of our Lands and Minerals Division. Jess actually has spent most of his career in the Pollution Control Agency, working in various regulatory and enforcement functions, and came over to help us out with directing the Lands and Minerals Division about 6 months ago. So, Jess, I'll turn it over to you.
Jess. Thank you.
Are you a deputy commissioner or assistant? What are you?
Special advisor to the deputy's assistant, yes.
Okay, for the record, none of you have to call him that, okay? Call him Mr. Richards, okay?
Mr. Chair, members, my name is Jess Richards. I'm the director of the Lands and Minerals Division. Thank you for the opportunity to discuss some of our budget initiatives this year with you. The Lands and Minerals Division is charged with three primary responsibilities. We manage the state's mineral resource for the benefit of all Minnesotans. We ensure that mining development is done in an environmentally sound manner and that mined areas are properly reclaimed. And the division also provides the real estate leadership and expertise for managing the department and the state's 5.5 million acres of state-owned land. The management of state mineral resources is done by overseeing mineral leases, exploration, and royalty collection for the benefit of schools, universities, and communities. The division handles the permit to mine and financial assurance process for all of the existing mines and all future mine permitting. And we're also heavily engaged with our Ecological and Water Resources Division on the environmental review process for mining. The division also provides mapping for and educational services related to aggregate mining. Our land real estate management activities cover a wide range of services from land acquisition and sales to management of the payment in lieu of taxes program to the administration of leases for everything from utility crossings to hunting shacks on state lands. The division is also leading the development of a new department-wide effort that we call Strategic Land Asset Management, which is an effort to align our department-wide goals with the real estate type of transactions that we use, really looking at the types of acquisitions, sales, and the tools that we use in finding the optimal package that meets our department's conservation goals.
So conservation. So do you do the conservation easements, too, then, in your division?
Mr. Chair, members, yes, we do handle the real estate pieces of the conservation easements in coordination with the divisions that are working on those easements, yes.
Senator, go ahead.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chair. Was there an effort by the department to kind of catalog and get your arms around how many of those you had and where they all were? And are you making any progress with that, or is that an effort that's ongoing?
Mr. Chair, members, the department has been working on that, and specifically we are trying to work through on trying to get some backlog work done on determining the status of those conservation easements. We've done some good work on scenic waterways. Deputy Commissioner, do you have anything to add to that?
No, we've been actually in the conservation easement game for 20 or 30 years. As Jess said, we are catching up on our responsibilities related to monitoring. Current, modern standard would require that we monitor each one of those easements annually. We would also have a baseline report for each one of those easements so that you can determine if any changes have taken place that might be in violation of the easement terms. And we are in the process of catching up, going backwards, and developing those baseline reports and implementing the annual monitoring.
Thank you. Mr. Richards, you mentioned permits to mine. They're near and dear to my heart. And we've been mining now for 125 years iron ore. Now, I'm not talking about the precious metals here. And in the perfect world, if everything goes well, and a company like U.S. Steel comes in and wants to get a new permit to mine in a different pit, how long does it take your department just to issue the permit to mine, or is it, are you totally in conjunction with the EPA and the MPCA and whatever other agency might be involved, or is your job just to get the permit to mine out?
Mr. Chair, members, the Lands and Minerals Division, the responsibility for permitting is the permit to mine. And on a project like U.S. Steel, for example, a U.S. Steel expansion, there'll be multiple different permits that have to occur for that type of expansion, including, in that case, environmental review. So we will make sure that our permitting is lined up with the environmental review process so that we're able to, on a project like that, we're able to execute the permitting and the permitting to mine in a responsible time frame in coordination with those processes. As you mentioned, there's other permits that are issued with other agencies. Those we do coordinate with those other agencies on permitting. Our goal is 150 days from the point of receipt of the application. Sometimes we make that and sometimes we don't, but we do work closely with the mines to make sure we're trying to get those out in an expeditious manner.
Give me an idea, because I don't know, sometimes I kind of think of these things in a simplistic terms, and so I can't understand all the complications of the process. What don't we know about mining that causes us to take so long to give out permits?
Mr. Chair, members, the DNR has a lot of experience with the permit to mine process, and I believe we do have a good understanding of the kind of work that needs to be done to do these permits. There are changing issues that have to be dealt with. For example, sometimes with mines, they have to meet new water standards, and those standards are implemented, for example, by the Pollution Control Agency for wastewater treatment and those types of things, that directly leads back to the permit to mine in how they manage ultimately, you know, the tailings basin stabilization or the seeps that might come out of a tailings basin or something like that. So we sometimes are implementing fixes through the permit to mine for issues that are evolving, regulatory issues that other agencies are dealing with.
So are you able to issue a permit to mine before the other agencies issue their permits, or do they all have to come out at the same time?
Mr. Chair, members, no, we could issue a permit to mine in many cases before the other agencies could issue their permits. Oftentimes we will issue permits that have contingencies upon other agencies' permits, or you know, the solution might be found in another agency's permit to a particular issue, but we can do some of that work, yes.
Because it just seemed a little overboard to me when U.S. Steel announced in 2008 that they were going to start up a new line, and it took 4 years and $30 million for us to get the permits. And I don't know, maybe I'm wrong, but that seems like a long time to me. And we can talk about that later.
Sounds good.
Okay. Go ahead.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. This next slide shows the history of expenditures for the Lands and Minerals Division. Some of the key things to note here are, like other divisions, this division has also experienced some direct general fund reductions over time, and most significantly in the past few years. This is highlighted by the blue bar on the bottom. You can also see the general fund related to PILT, payment in lieu of taxes. And you can see that this has changed over time. This is the red bar. The DNR in the Lands and Minerals Division manages these funds, which are all passed through to the counties. And lastly, you can see in fiscal year 06 is where we created the minerals management account. And this was created to manage the reduction in the general fund. On this slide, the minerals management account is identified as the natural resource fund, which I believe is in purple. Okay, moving forward to the proposals for the fiscal year 14 and 15 budget, you can see the governor's recommendation is for an overall budget of $74.2 million. By way of comparison, for fiscal years 12 and 13, the budget was 79.1. This 14-15 proposal includes the general fund reduction of approximately $4 million or $2 million per fiscal year. As the commissioner mentioned, this reduction comes primarily from our real estate services. Approximately $1.84 million per year is from real estate services, and the remaining $164,000 is from our core library services in Hibbing. The $1.84 from real estate services, as the commissioner mentioned, is a reduction that is going to be managed through moving to a cost recovery approach. And this is something that we're working with the entire department to design, how it would work. We're in the process of doing this, and we're expecting to have the approach nailed down later this spring. The budget proposal also includes some increases due to proposed changes in fees and revenue forecasts.
Can you explain the real estate services thing just a little bit more? Sure. Are you reducing your activity in the area, or are you not selling as much? What's actually going on?
Mr. Chair, members, what we're going to evaluate is all of those things. So it's a combination of, right now the division provides real estate services and everything from legal services to title work to appraisal work, survey work, and down the line, those types of things directly related to real estate transactions. Some of that work we're looking at, are there things we can do differently or more efficiently? And at the same time, we're going to be working with the divisions then to say what kind of services do the divisions need that are critical to their acquisition or sales or other real estate needs, and therefore what is the level of expertise that's needed in lands and minerals in order to cover that work. And so it's an effort that we haven't completely flushed out yet, but we're in the process of it. We've got a team together across the department to try to determine which exact real estate services we need to continue on.
How have we come up with the number if we don't exactly know what we're doing?
Mr. Chair, members, the number is we came up with the number of the general fund reduction based on the needs of the department, and that real estate services is the exact number that's related to real estate. So essentially, the 1.84 is the complete costs covered by the general fund right now for real estate services. And that's where we got that number from, and that's what we're looking to go back towards a cost recovery approach for.
Senator Scalzi.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And I was just looking at the increase through time of the PILT money, and I'm wondering, is that reflective of purchases made by Lessard Sams?
Mr. Chairman, Senator Scalzi, I'll maybe take that one. The increases that you see there, we'll go back on this slide. For example, between fiscal year 6 and fiscal year 7, there's a fairly large bump up there. And what that is a result of some legislation back in 1999 that for acquired lands, not all lands, so it wouldn't include, say, trust lands and tax forfeit lands and that sort of thing, but for lands that we have acquired for a specific purpose, every 5 years, county assessors actually reassess those properties, and then the PILT is based on 0.75% of that assessed value. And so every 5 years since 1999, we have seen this jump up as a result of that reassessment process. So most of that increase you are seeing there is due to that formula, and a small part of that, relatively small part of that, is a result of additional lands being acquired and PILT being applied to those additional lands.
Senator Weber. Are you done, Senator Scalzi?
No, I'm fine.
Okay. Senator Weber.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. That five-year reassessment, would that reassessment be based on the land use at which the property was when it went into the DNR ownership? In other words, if it was ag crop land, would that be continued to be valued as ag crop land in that process?
Mr. Chairman, Senator Weber, that question might be best posed to a county assessor. One of the things that we discovered as we looked into this, as we pulled together the PILT report that was delivered to the legislature a month or so ago here, was there is likely a lot of inconsistency across the counties as to how they approach assessing those lands. And the other thing we discovered is there really isn't any check on that. The counties assess, determine that value, send it to us, and we're not like a property taxpayer where we can object to that and appeal it. We are more or less going on good faith that the assessors are doing good work there. But the assessor, we did have an assessor as part of our work group, and I know the statewide assessors group is taking a look at this issue to see if they could bring a better standardization of that process.
Thank you.
Okay, thank you. Mr. Richards.
It's almost the whole budget.
Mr. Chair, members, we'll now move to the change items and the new fee increases that we're proposing for fiscal year 14-15. Our first change item proposes new fees for the leasing, permitting, and aggregate reclamation work. These changes would collectively result in revenues of approximately $478,000 per year. Currently, the fees for this work do not cover the cost of these services. And so just by way of example, the fees would be increases to the permit to mine fee. And what this would do would help us to maintain the current level of resources that we put towards this permit to mine work. Increase in the application fee for mineral leases. This would fully recover the cost of this work, thus leaving more revenues in the minerals management account for schools, universities, and local taxing districts. And then we would also establish an application fee for real estate leases. This would offset a small amount of the general fund reduction for these types of services. And finally, we would establish an aggregate reclamation fee. And what this would do is help us start the work of environmental protection and safety on state-owned gravel pits.
And members, if you have this particular handout right here in front of you, I don't know if we have, does everybody have this one?
Mm-hmm.
You can see what the proposed fee increases are, and they're pretty drastic in some cases. So we may have to figure out how to do this one. It's on page 6, and so we may have some further discussion on this because they are some drastic increases. The major program elements on the bottom of page 6. Okay, Mr. Richards.
Mr. Chair, members, moving to the next slide, the next change item is the drill hole inspection and drill core library fee. As you know, and I tell you what, I've got a little sample to pass around. That's one of the things, and maybe Deputy can pass that around. For those of you that may not have seen drill core, I'm going to send around a piece of drill core that we have, and this is an example of the type of material that's stored in our drill core library, and these are the types of sites that we see. As you look at this piece of drill core, you can see that there's some material on there that's kind of a yellowish, greenish in color, and that's the metallic minerals that's in the core, and in this case, there's a little bit of copper in there and a little bit of nickel. So the fees for the this change item would be to help cover the costs both for general fund reductions and to manage the services for our drilling inspections. The DNR staff inspect every exploration drill site to ensure protection of the surface and to ensure groundwater protection. And we average about 52 inspections per year. About half of these are for state-owned mineral leases, and the others are for private mineral leases. The new fee related to inspections would generate $104,000 per year and would fully recover the cost of this work. With the Drill Corps Library, as you all know, this library is housed in our Hibbing office. And as the commissioner mentioned, there is over 2.3 million feet of drill core at the Drill Corps Library, and that's the picture you see on the screen there. That's been collected over the last century. The value of this drill core is approximately $200 million. DNR staff manage everything from the receiving and recording of new core deliveries to the pulling of core for outside parties for review. The new proposed fee would recover approximately $105,000 per year, and this would partially offset the general fund reduction in this area. We would also limit the days and hours of operation, as the commissioner mentioned, to a maximum of 20 hours per week to make up the difference. Both of these activities are critical to the ongoing work of mineral exploration in Minnesota. The inspections ensure protection of the environment and site restoration. And the core library is really a fundamental starting point for our mineral lease process.
$200 million worth?
That's my understanding, Mr. Chair.
Can I assume no one's ever tried to break in and steal it?
Mr. Chair, members, it would take a lot of trucks. Maybe a few large mine trucks would do it.
Maybe. Senator Saxon.
But, Mr. Chair, I think it would only be the gold they'd be after.
Oh. I don't know. We've got a big vein of that up there now, too. You guys realize that, right? Yeah, okay, good.
Mr. Chair, members, that concludes the lands and minerals portion of this presentation. I'll certainly stand for any additional questions.
So if we don't raise the fees, give me what happens.
Mr. Chair, members, the fees represent approximately, and the reduction in hours represent approximately 1.5 FTEs. And so we'd have to find a way to make up those funds in a different way.
And that's just at the Drill Corps Library, though,
yes.
Right? And in the mining industry, there's a bunch of big numbers that you're raising fees on. What's the issue there?
Mr. Chair, members, the fee increases for the permit to mine, for example, are directly related to us being able to maintain the same level of service that we have going on right now. The majority of the work that we have right now is related to taconite mine expansions or scram mining work, other amendments, and we are, with this fee increase, we're trying to ensure that we can continue the same level of services.
Well, it was my understanding, though, that when you charge a fee, for example, to Polymet for, I don't know, for some non-ferrous permit for something or other, if they you would charge them $37,500. You use that money to actually pay for the work that you're providing for Polymet, for example. If you go above the $37,500 in work, don't you just charge them for their work?
Mr. Chair, members, the Polymet project, for example, has a fee that's associated with the environmental review, and that's a cost agreement that is reached between the department and the company to perform the environmental impact statement work that's necessary for that project. Once Polymet was to come in for permitting, they will go into the permitting application fee process. So the fee process set for permitting is different than the negotiated fee process for environmental review.
So, but once you use up the money that you charge them for the fee, do you not charge them again for whatever services you're providing?
Mr. Chair, members, for example, on an environmental impact statement, if there's additional money that's needed to continue the work, then we would negotiate a new agreement.
Okay, then how does that work, for example, on the increase of the taconite from $60,000 to $84,000? If you use up the $60,000 worth of money, do you not just charge them extra money, or do you how does that work?
Mr. Chair, members, the fee increases for the permits related to the permit to mine are monies that are used to ensure the stable staffing that's necessary to keep that permitting program running. And it's not if one particular project goes a little bit longer or is a little bit more complex, it doesn't get additional charges for that work. And so it's prorated over the course of the work that we do on all mining work.
So the increase is just an attempt to do what?
Mr. Chair, members, the increase in the permit to mine fees is an attempt to maintain the same staffing that we have right now working on permitting to mine work.
Because we're moving general
and research work,
because we're moving general fund money out of lands and minerals, is that why?
Mr. Chair, members, yes, some of the lands and minerals general fund reduction, such as the Hibbing Corps Library, comes from the general fund reduction. The permit to mine increase, we had some one-time funding that occurred in fiscal year 10 and 11 that is no longer going to be present. That was after a discussion about general fund reductions to lands and minerals. And that one-time funding is not going to carry forward. In fact, starts to run out here very soon. In fact, that money is just about gone. And so that's what this permit to mine fee helps us make up some of that difference.
Okay. Are you done, or you continue, or you got more?
Mr. Chair, I'm glad to be done. If you'd like me to be done.
Senator Dietzig, did you have a question?
He's funny.
No? Okay. All right.
Thank you.
Okay. Thank you.
Mr. Chairman, next up is Ecological and Water Resources, Director Steve Hirsch. Steve is a career employee with DNR, spent most of his career managing fisheries programs, and about 8 years ago came over and took a job with what was then the Ecological Resources Division. Since then, That division and our waters division have been merged into a single division, and Steve's now director of that single division. Go ahead, Steve.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, members. Steve Hirsch, DNR Director of Ecological and Water Resources. And as Deputy Commissioner Shad mentioned, our division was formed about 2.5 years ago by combining the former divisions of Waters and Ecological Resources with the goal of having healthy watersheds throughout Minnesota and looking for the connections between the programs of the two former divisions. We are not the largest division in DNR, but we probably have the widest breadth of different programs, and I think you'll see that as I go through and describe some of those. And the first thing you'll notice on our history of expenditure slide is all the different funding sources, and this is a reflection of all the different programs that we cover in this division. And a couple things I'd point out about the expenditure slide: the trend in general fund is a little bit less obvious than you see for the department as a whole. You'll see that in there was an increase in fiscal year 08 and 09 in general fund, and that was due primarily to some one-time general fund funding for the beginning of the Clean Water Legacy programs. This was before we actually had the legacy funding, as well as an increase in general fund for aquatic invasive species. And then you'll notice that in fiscal year 12, there was a dramatic drop in general fund, but actually what happened here is we created a water management account, and so revenues from water appropriation fees that used to go to the general fund now go to this water management account. It's about $5 million a year, and our general fund was decreased by that same amount. Our general fund appropriation was decreased by $5 million a year, roughly, and then this water management account was given to us as another dedicated account, so for about $5 million a year. So budgetarily, it was a wash, and that's why it looks like we got a lot less general fund.
So can I move this five? Can I move this $5 million to lands and minerals if I want? Or,
Mr. Chairman, it might be one of the things at the discretion of this committee, certainly, but I'm sure there would be other voices involved as well. So,
I like that answer. Okay. Go ahead, Mr. Hirsch.
If you look at the next slide, it shows our funding by strategic objective, and these are the next slide, we're going to look at the funding, the different funding sources we've got, and just talk a little bit about the budget overview. We had in this fiscal year, this biennium, we had one-time funding from the Environment Natural Resource Trust Fund, Heritage Enhancement Account, and Invasive Species Account to fund aquatic invasive species. And this one-time funding, as you know, is going away. And so we're going to have the change item that the Commissioner Landwehr already described of $3.75 million a year to cover the loss of this one-time funding for aquatic invasive species. I'd also talk a little bit about the other funding sources you see here. We've got a lot of federal funding in this division, and that includes a number of different things. It includes federal FEMA funding for dam safety. It includes federal funding for state wildlife grants that support our non-game wildlife programs. It includes funding for a program called the Long-Term Resource Monitoring Program on the Mississippi River that's headquartered out of Lake City. We've got coastal zone management funding that funds projects up in the Lake Superior watershed, and then we do get some federal funding for invasive species as well.
Tell me about the FEMA funding for dam safety. Does that come after the fact, or when do we get that? Do we just apply for it and try and fix our dams, or does it happen after a flood or the dam has been damaged?
We do have some, Mr. Chairman, we do have some of that federal FEMA money that's basically incorporated into our operating budget. I'm not sure exactly when in the fiscal year it shows up. I could find that out. But we don't have to. It's not the same as the money that the local communities apply for after there's a disaster. It is money that's actually in our operating budget to help with that program.
Okay.
You'll also see there's a category of special revenue funds, and what this has been, and particularly in recent years, a lot of this is the environmental impact statement funding we get from the mining companies.
Go back to the FEMA funding again. Is it dedicated to that then?
Mr. Chairman, yes.
Okay. All right.
The special revenue funding includes the environmental impact statement funding that we've been getting in recent years for all the big mining projects. We also have some stream gauging agreements that we do with PCA, and this also includes dollars that we get for publications and seminars that some of our staff do. And then the natural resources funding includes invasive species account, the water recreation account, the newly formed water management account that I just spoke of a moment ago, and then the non-game wildlife account as well. Getting into our change items then, the first one, as I mentioned, is for aquatic invasive species, and this would be $3.75 million a year to replace the one-time funding. And the one-time funding was $4.5 million in the current fiscal year, or fiscal year 13, and $3.2 million in fiscal year 12. And what we would do with this change level is we would maintain the current levels of AIS enforcement, which is about 5,600 hours a year, and the current levels of watercraft inspections at the landings, which is about 70,000 hours a year. It would also allow us to maintain our current levels of grants to local units of government for them to do watercraft inspections. And this is about $16,000 a year. And also our grants to do invasive aquatic plant control, usually curly leaf pondweed and Eurasian water milfoil. So these are the things that we would be able to maintain with this change level. As Commissioner Landwehr said, it does give us a little bit less money than we currently got with the one-time funding for the current fiscal year, or for the next fiscal year if this proposal went as is. There would be about $763,000 less for aquatic invasive species management than we have for the current fiscal year. And this would affect grants that we give for public awareness. These are grants that we've been giving to local groups to do their own information and educational materials. We've found that although this has been a good program at times, some of the information that has come out has been duplicative of the information we have, and we feel like maybe we should focus on making sure that our own information is up to date. We've received some criticism that we need to update some of our own brochures. So we would reduce the grants for public awareness. We would also take away some of the money we've been providing for zebra mussel research. But we do have the newly funded University of Minnesota Aquatic Invasive Species Research Center, which is going to have zebra mussel research as one of its priorities. We have a little less money for equipment maintenance, and this particularly affects the decontamination units. However, discussions that we've been having with stakeholders indicate that we're going to move more into the area of having the private sector provide some of these decontamination services, so we think we can have a little bit less funding for maintenance of our own equipment there, and then there'd be a little less money to develop best management practices at water access sites. So that's what the $763,000 reduction that we would take with the loss of this one time would impact.
Mr. Hirsch, just out of curiosity, if you had to raise the, say, a boating fee to make up for this general fund amount, how much would the fee have to go up?
Mr. Chairman, we had a change item last year that raised a similar raised about $5 million a year, and the increases weren't the same for all lengths of boats, and I don't know if I'll be able to remember exactly, but I think it was like a $5 increase for canoes and something like a $15 or $20 increase for medium-sized boats, and then perhaps like a $25 or $30 increase for the larger boats, and that got us about $5 million a year.
Okay.
And correct, as Deputy Commissioner Shad reminded me, that's an increase that these are three-year licenses, so those are increases over 3 years, not every year.
Okay. All right. Thank you.
The other change item is for insurance on an Asian carp deterrent barrier at Lock and Dam 1. The chair was just at a meeting we had with the governor and other stakeholders this morning that talked a lot about this project. This project is still being discussed in terms of what it's actually going to finally look like. The need for insurance, though, arises from the fact that this is the Lock and Dam is owned and operated by the Army Corps of Engineers. And so when another entity like a state government wants to enter into an agreement with the Corps to operate something at one of their locks, they have to have what's called a real estate agreement. And typically, when we run into these kinds of contractual issues with the Corps, Legal people from the Corps staff and the Attorney General's office that the state uses often have a difficult time agreeing on liability language. Each entity wants to have liability focused in the other direction. And at times it's actually been a showstopper for getting these contracts approved by both entities. So one of the ways around that is for the state to have insurance coverage. And we've been advised that this would be about roughly the amount of money we might need, but it's very much an estimate at this point. And also, in addition to this, if and when this barrier gets built, we're going to need long-term operation and maintenance funding as well.
So did we ever figure out after I left that meeting how we closed that lock?
Mr. Chairman, I don't think we figured that out, but there's a lot of desire amongst some parties to do that, definitely.
Okay. And this, okay, so let's see. Have we used any of this $7.5 million?
Mr. Chairman, no. This would be a change item request for the next biennium. So.
That was last year. So, yeah, but did we spend it? We haven't spent it yet, right?
I'm sorry. I misunderstood the question, Mr. Chairman. The $7.5 million in Outdoor Heritage Fund for the prevention of Asian carp, we have used some of that money. We have not used any of that money for the Lock and Dam 1 barrier. The money that we've been using so far for the contract with BAR comes from a 2008 bonding appropriation for Mississippi River barrier work. And we will start using that money, the Outdoor Heritage Fund appropriation for this project when that bonding appropriation runs out.
And can we use that money for the liability insurance?
Mr. Chairman, we don't have approval to use that money for the liability insurance right now in our accomplishment plan with the Wet-Sam's Outdoor Heritage Council. We could go in and request that change, but we do have the other parts of that appropriation, you know, allocated for different activities, and I know that in the past the council has been reluctant to want to use the Outdoor Heritage Fund for the actual operation and maintenance costs for this barrier.
And what did I hear about Iowa this morning?
Mr. Chairman, that has to do with a barrier that we've cost-shared with the state of Iowa. They found Asian carp in what the area called the Iowa Great Lakes, which is the Okoboji Lakes. And those lakes connect to some smaller lakes on our side of the border. And so we cost-shared with the state of Iowa on an electric barrier at the foot of the Iowa Great Lakes. And the cost of that barrier, the total cost of that barrier was $961,000. And our portion that we cost-shared on was $261,000. And that's some of the Outdoor Heritage Fund appropriation that we have used. Iowa will be responsible for all the long-term maintenance and operation costs.
And that barrier is working, right?
Mr. Chairman, it just went online a couple of weeks ago.
Okay. All right.
Mr. Chairman, we also receive legacy funds. Clean Water Legacy and Park and Trail Legacy Funds are included in the governor's recommendation. We do have a brief presentation on those sources of funding. Okay. If your committee would like to take a look at that.
Yes, we would. Go ahead.
So the Clean Water Legacy change item, as you can see here, is a little over $9 million a year. It's a change item, but it's mostly work that we're already doing. And you can see that the work is divided into those five categories, the top five bullets there. I won't bother to read them to you. And then there's an example of some of the outcomes we've achieved with those dollars, and I'll talk in a little bit more detail about some of those in a minute. This shows a breakdown of how dollars have been spent in each of these five categories, and I would just point out again that in fiscal year 07 and then 08 and 09, those were actually mostly one-time general fund dollars. That was before we actually had the legacy funding. Oh, I'm sorry. This is the abbreviated presentation, so I'm sorry. This is the only slide. So I will just talk very, very briefly about what we do in each of these categories. The monitoring assessment, we have three things essentially that we do, and that's stream flow monitoring, index of biotic integrity work, which is basically looking at non-game fish populations and aquatic plants to determine the health of the system, and then assessment of mercury in fish tissue. We do about 70 lakes a year with other funding sources, and the Clean Water Fund has enabled us to add about 80 lakes a year. The Watershed Restoration and Protection Strategies was formerly called the TMDL, or Total Maximum Daily Load Plans, and this is basically technical assistance to develop the plans to either address water quality impairments or keep waters from becoming impaired. Drinking water protection is our observation.
So have we changed the name of the TMDLs, or is this just a DNR change?
Mr. Chairman, it's a change that all the agencies are using. We still have TMDLs are still described in some of the planning that we do, but the idea behind doing watershed restoration and protection strategies, as the name is, we're looking at things beyond just what a specific impairment is. We're trying to look at waters that are not impaired from becoming impaired, and we're trying to look at solutions that go beyond just addressing the specific impairment. So they're starting to adopt, all the agencies are starting to adopt this name, not just DNR. The drinking water protection.
Just getting used to TMDL. Jeez.
I have a hard time remembering when I see RAPS what it stands for. That's why I have to have it spelled out. Okay. It stands for Watershed Restoration and Protection Strategies. The drinking water protection category includes our monitoring wells that help us get a handle on groundwater sustainability issues, and not just the installation of the wells, but also the data collection and analysis that goes along with that. Then the non-point source implementation, this is when you get the TMDL plans or watershed restoration and protection strategies, and you're starting to actually implement those strategies on the ground. The non-point source implementation is that category, actually doing the projects that address the impairments, and we provide technical assistance for those projects. And then the applied research and tool development is basically three things. It's evaluating the things that we're doing on the ground to determine how well they're actually fixing the impairments, developing specific tools to target conservation practices, and then funding for the agencies to coordinate their data management and storage.
So why is that number so much higher now than it was in 08 and 09?
Mr. Chairman, in 08 and 09, this program was first just getting started, and I don't remember specifically what all the things that were funded in the other categories, but this just was an area that wasn't very well developed yet. But as we've gotten into this now, this has included things like the LIDAR funding, which gives you a very accurate picture of topography and helps you determine how water flows over the landscape. And it's very important, for example, if you've got a turbidity impairment in a stream and you want to figure out where that's coming from, you can use that LIDAR and do some modeling, and you can get hot spots in the watershed where you can start to look for where the project should occur instead of having to look at the whole watershed. Another example in this area that's a big one for us is the County Geological Atlas, where we're characterizing the geology and hydrology of our groundwater systems.
Okay, we got rid of TMDL, now we got LIDAR. What is LIDAR?
Mr. Chairman, I don't even remember what that one stands for.
Some research resonating. Something.
What do we do on LIDAR?
Mr. Chairman, what it is it's basically a digital picture of the elevation of the land. And so in the past you had, you know, the topography maps where you had the contour lines and you might have it down to every 5 feet or every 10 foot accuracy. This basically gives you a digital picture of the topography of that land. So when you do water, you know, water modeling, you just get much better results in terms of how water is actually flowing across that land.
So it looks like either you're cutting the applied research and tool development, you're cutting it back in 14-15, or you have it all in place and you don't need as much money. Is that what's going on, or what's going on here?
Mr. Chairman, one of the main reasons for that is the LIDAR is pretty much done now. And so we don't need that LIDAR funding in this next biennium.
So are these FTEs then mostly, the 2.4?
Mr. Chairman, I believe so. I can check on that quick, though.
Okay. Mr. Hirsch? Mr. Hirsch, it's light detection and ranging.
Thank you, but I probably won't remember it if I'm asked
to. That's why we got these little toys now, and our minds don't work anymore. So we let somebody else do the thinking for us.
The actual, just to get to your question, Mr. Chairman, the actual number of FTEs for this category is not that large. It's 8.4.
Okay. Senator Scalzi.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And as just as a matter of process, I was wondering what is your intent this year with the Clean Water Legacy money? Since we have a subcommittee, would you intend that we write the bill or they write the bill and bring it back to us before it goes to finance? Or
it's my understanding what Senator Cohen wants to do is have the subcommittee send the bills to the divisions, and then the divisions will act on them and send them back to the subcommittee, so then recommend them to the full finance committee. That's my understanding. So we'll see how that all goes. So you'll, in other words, you'll get some input here. If that's your, I mean, okay. Sorry. Go ahead, Mr. Hirsch.
Mr. Chairman, I believe if there's no more questions, that's it for me.
Okay. Thank you very much.
Mr. Chairman, next up we've got our Division of Forestry. Director Forrest Bow. Forrest is also a career DNR employee. Spent much of his career working with trails. He was a former director of our Trails Division. When that division was merged with our Parks Division, Forrest was the deputy director in our Parks and Trails Division and took over as forestry director almost a year to the day from today. So, Forrest, I'll hand it over to you.
Well, welcome to the committee.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, members. First of all, maybe I'll just provide a little bit of clarification to the comments the commissioner made earlier. I know that
He wasn't misleading us, was he?
I'm going to provide some clarification. First of all, the DNR has been a steady supplier for the timber industry in the state. Over the last decade, we've been able to supply between 750 and 900,000 cords annually. So we have that strong track record of doing that. The commissioner was accurate. There is an age class imbalance. We started harvesting with a little bit more vigor here in Minnesota about 30 years ago, and that those forests that were harvested 30 years ago aren't quite ready to harvest again. So we have a lot of older forest, we have a lot of younger forest, and we have a good amount of forest in the right age class, but there is a little bit of an imbalance there. That imbalance is really only just with one species, however. It's with aspen. So there are alternative species that are available to kind of bridge that gap. We do modeling that would indicate what that sustainable or allowable harvest would be. Our current models would suggest about 720,000 cords per year could be harvested. With the changes that we're looking at with our older forest, how much older forest we have on the landscape, and additionally we're looking at our rotation ages, both of those would contribute more cords, so that number should go up as well over some time here. And lastly, there are other things that we can do. For instance, you could go in and do some thinning of stands, and we've not had the funding in order to do that over the last many years. So again, we work as best we can to provide and meet the needs of the industry in the state. So,
Senator Saxon.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and Mr. Bow. I don't doubt anything that's been said here, but I think I've got to ask you what the commissioner talked about a couple things. He talked about blowdowns, which were responsible for not as much money coming in because of the poor quality of the wood, but also it takes a lot of time to harvest blowdowns. We all know that. but secondly, that one of our big problems is in not being able to reach our goals in terms of wood is, let's face the manpower, woman power, person power in the woods, and we've talked about a lot of good reasons, but is that not the number one reason why we probably aren't getting out what we can in terms of a goal?
Mr. Chair, Senator Saxog, I think that's where the clarification comes in, because I think what the commissioner was really talking about is with this budget scenario that we have in front of us, we will only be able to put up 600 to 650,000 cords. The forest has the capacity to produce, but we don't have the capacity to put up.
And Mr. Chair, so Director Bull, I think that this has got to be done on more than the back of a napkin, as we were talking about earlier. But that's, I'm sure, what the chair is looking for here, and so am I, and many of the rest of us is just, you know, what do you, so to get what we think the industry needs, you know, what's it going to cost? And that's a fair question. And if you guys, you know, can't do it, I mean, we've got to figure out a way. So that's kind of what I'm, and I appreciate your input.
Mr. Chairman, Senator Saxog, just step back just a little bit. It's a little complicated. We fund our day-to-day operations in forestries with basically two pots of money, general fund and the forest management investment account. And one of the challenges in using that forest management investment account, which is made up of revenues from timber sales, is that tends to be kind of volatile. And so when markets dropped and the price per cord diminished here, five or six years ago, that impacted revenue to that account, which meant we had less support for that day-to-day work that we do. So it's and then again with the blowdown in the last year, we were selling that blowdown timber for less than we would have, you know, if we were selling good and healthy wood. So revenue declined to the FMIA account, and therefore we have less revenue than we had projected in that account. So I guess the point I'm making is we are trying to fund an operation where we hire foresters, train them up, and try to provide support to them, in part with general fund, but in part with this FMIA account, which is volatile and not necessarily well suited for funding, you know, long-term efforts like that. And that's part of the challenge here is we are, you know, recommending an increase in general fund, but that's being more than offset by the decrease in FMIA revenues, and then because we can't spend that into the red, we don't have as much FMIA support for our forest management program. So that's part of the complexity here that we're bringing in front of you is the challenge in managing long-term operations with those two separate funding sources.
Right, Mr. Chair, I agree and I understand, but what I'm getting down to, I guess, in the nitty-gritty is that it's important here that we make our decisions. Our financial decisions are going to be the reason why we're going to either have our goal of or the industry goal of 800,000 cords, or, you know, we'll be at 650. So we need to make that decision as a committee. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
So I hope the message is clear, that this, I think this committee wants you guys to cut 850,000 cords, okay? We put up 850,000 cords. But, Mr. Bull, answer this one, because I'm trying to figure out if this is what you're telling me about the young trees versus the ones that are ready to cut, if it's anecdotal or if it's an actual fact. Because oftentimes somebody will just say, oh, there's a bunch of young trees over here. It must be happening all over the state. Is this, I mean, do we have actual statistics that show this, or is this one of your foresters came in one day and said, I saw some young trees here and they're not ready to cut?
Mr. Chair, that's a fair question. It is more than anecdotal. We do forest inventory that shows those kinds of things. One thing I would point out, and I'll talk about this more later on in my presentation, we have had to put a lot of things kind of on the back burner over the last number of years as we've had declining budgets. One of those things has been our inventory. So that would be one thing that we would certainly like to invest in again so that we make sure what the right numbers are. But again, I'll talk more about that and the number as we move forward.
Okay. And, you know, Senator Sachs has been pretty clear about the industry, and we'll hear from the industry eventually here, maybe not today, but eventually. And I think they're pretty clear about wanting to have 850 to a million put up each year if they possibly can. And I think you're clear about that, too. And we're just talking about resources now more than anything, if I'm not mistaken.
That's correct, Mr. Chair.
Okay.
So, starting off, the Division of Forestry provides a long-term sustainable yield of forest resources from our state lands. We improve the forest health and productivity of other land, other public, private, and community forest land, and we protect life, property, and natural resources from wildfires. We also promote the conservation, enjoyment, and use of our forests. Minnesota forests provide a robust forest products and tourism industry. We provide abundant habitat, healthy wildlife populations, and we help maintain the biodiversity through varied forest conditions that are resilient to climate change and other forest threats. We have some large management responsibilities. We manage 4.5 million acres of DNR-administered forest land, 2.5 million which are trust, and we are responsible for wildfire on all ownerships in the state, totaling approximately 45 million acres. A little bit of a look back.
You just piqued a question here, because wildfire, when you said wildfire, how do you interact with the U.S. Forest Service when there's a fire? Remember that one a couple of years ago that they decided to let burn, and then it ended up costing $22 million to put it out, when there are a couple of DNR planes at the Hibbing Airport, they could have dumped a couple buckets of water on it, and it probably would have been out in a day. How do you interact with the Forest Service?
Mr. Chair, we interact with them quite significantly. The fire you're talking about was actually in the Boundary Waters Canoe Area Wilderness. That was a federal fire. When it's a federal fire, they pull us in when they need additional resources. When it's a state fire on other lands other than those federal lands, we pull them in when we need additional resources.
Okay. So they obviously didn't call you to bring the planes up, huh? Never mind. That's okay. Go ahead.
Mr. Chair, members, this slide shows how forestry has been funded historically and currently. We're funded by two main sources, as Deputy Commissioner Shad had identified, really the general fund and the Forest Management Investment Account, which is located in the Natural Resources Fund. There's some other funding sources, relatively small, and many of those are one-time funding sources. As Deputy Shad had mentioned, the timber sale revenues are deposited into the Forest Management Investment Account, and of course the current challenge is that those revenues have been on a significant decline for a number of reasons, the economic downturn and the blowdown events. So as we sell that timber that has been blown down, we're getting between one-third and one-half of its value. And in addition to that, as Senator Skoy had mentioned earlier, you don't get the volume either. So kind of a double-edged sword. You don't get the value or the volume. As we move forward.
Do you get any bonding? Do you get any bonding money for this? I don't see bonding on here.
Mr. Chair, we do get some bonding dollars. We've had them in the past, mainly for our reforestation efforts and also a little bit for our roads and bridges. The roads and bridges could show up in our operations services division, I believe. And
Mr. Chair, we have not been reflecting any bonding appropriations in any of these charts you've been showing.
Okay. All right.
Thank you. The 14-15 budget includes $4 million in general fund. That's an increase. There's also some slight decreases in other funds and some decreases in anticipated federal funds. Probably most importantly is that the forecasted revenue in the Forest Management Investment Account does not support the existing level of appropriation, and that's significant for us. Since 2008, the forest management investment account has declined by about 32%. In that same period of time, forestry has experienced a 25% reduction in general fund. We've managed these reductions through attrition, operating with essentially about 100 FTEs less than we have today. We have reduced or suspended or postponed many of our activities, those being forest inventory, a lot of our silvicultural work, making sure those stands are fully stocked for the future, and all of those things have been suspended or put on hold. And we've also sought other funding sources, those being federal funds, other grants. So a lot of our programs are what we would call on soft money, those being around the forest health and some of those programs. The change item then is for $2 million each year in the general fund. I talked about this on the previous slide. The outcome levels described are significantly lower than our 10-year average of activities in those areas. The addition of this general fund helps partially offset those cuts to services that we would otherwise have to make. This is important. This is important because Minnesota forest products sector contributes $16.2 billion in total economic effect and annually supports nearly 61,000 jobs in the state. Also generates $436 million in state and local taxes, and that's why this is a good investment of general funds. Our second
We should invest some more general funds. Okay, go ahead. I'm beating a dead horse, but go ahead. Keep going.
Our second change item is $1 million each year out of the Heritage Enhancement Account. This request provides for the assessment of forest resources, development of on-site or development of site-level tools, and identification of and response to forest health threats. We've received this money for the last two bienniums. It's been one-time money, and this particular request would make this change item part of our base. Minnesota has a nationally renowned program with our ecological classification system. We've been recognized on several levels. We use very sophisticated data to determine the management techniques for generating optimal benefits in our forests. As a matter of fact, in 2012, we had an external audit on our forests, and they reported that DNR's use of the native plant community data to inform management of our forests is an exceptional practice. So we've been getting a lot of kudos for that.
Does it do anything to the value of the...
Mr. Chair, it does things for the value, absolutely. When we look at this level of inventory and analysis, what you're doing is you're looking at not just the trees, but the plant types, the soils that are there, what's going to grow the best, what are the limitations of the site, and you plant and harvest accordingly to those plans, which does ultimately provide better production. I believe that's it.
Okay, thank you. How many we got left? Three? Four.
Mr. Chair, we've got four divisions left. Want to try to squeeze one more in today, or?
Oh, one more, yeah. Okay. Yeah. Depends how long one more takes.
You want to do a short one or a long one? I think parks and trails might be a bit longer discussion and include some legacy funding. Operation Services is a fairly short presentation. We can probably get through that one fairly quickly.
Let's do that one then.
Okay. Lori, why don't you come up? Lori Martinson is our Director of Operation Services. Lori, before this, was actually Deputy Commissioner under Commissioner Holston. We asked her to stay on and actually bring together what used to be four service bureaus into a single new division, the Operations Services Division, and Lori will present that part of our budget.
Good afternoon, committee members and Mr. Chairman. My name is Lori Martinson. I'm the Director of Operations Services for the department. I'm here today to present the Operations Support Program as presented in the Governor's Biennial Budget.
Where are those solar panels from?
Those solar panels are at William O'Brien State Park, and those solar panels are produced by Solar 10K. I can't remember the exact name of the company. A Minnesota company. You'll be pleased to hear.
Chinese panels, though. But okay, go ahead.
And we recently installed at Afton State Park some other Minnesota-made solar panels.
Those were the right ones.
Okay. Yeah, okay. Within operations support, the program coordinates strategic priorities for the department, provides effective opportunities for stakeholder participation, conducts operations that reflect DNR cultural values, initiates process improvement in projects, ensures adoption of best science and management practices, and adapts programs to changing climate and energy markets. This slide gives an overview of the direct and statutory funds that are managed within this program area. It does not include the internal billing. You will notice that primarily what this is indicated in these slides are the pass-through grants. The big pink slides, the big pink is the Outdoor Heritage Fund, and then the blue, the pale blue is the Environmental Trust Fund dollars. Within our financial unit, we manage those grants on behalf of both the Lasard Sam's Outdoor Heritage Council and the LCCMR. For the current biennium, we are spending $175,000 per year of Outdoor Heritage funds to manage $100 million in grants. And on the trust fund side, we are spending $87,000 a year to manage $50 million in grants. So that's a service that we provide, and that's primarily what you're seeing reflected in this budget here. A little bit more breakdown of the non-pass-through dollars. We have $8.2 million for the biennium in federal funds. That's the Federal Boat and Water Safety Program. Natural resource funds that come from Lottery and Lou, those are the $640,000 that go to both the Duluth Zoo and the Como Park Zoo, and we manage that as pass-through grants as well. And then the special revenue is $3 million, and that's actually for the Conservation Volunteer Program. It's donations that we receive to run the Conservation Volunteer Program. We have one change item that's represented within this program area, and that is the data analytics and decision tools. We're requesting $300,000 per year to fund this initiative. The money would be appropriated to the divisions, and then my division would be billing back to those other programs to provide this service. Over time, the agency's databases have been developed in division silos, and really what this initiative does is takes a department approach to use data as an enterprise asset so that we can fully embed the data into decision-making processes for the department. It will expand our capacity to help manage and integrate natural resource data into workflow and decision-making for improved decision-making and natural resource results. We'll be able to link financial, program administration, and outcomes reporting systems, also increase public access to data, and increase use of decision support tools and processes. And one of the things that this initiative will do is to help us to modernize our data governance policies and practices so that we have a consistent approach in how we collect data and then start to share it across the department and with the citizens as well. And so the outcomes are that staff, decision makers, and the public would have the best information to address the very complex problems, many of which you've already talked about today, that data integration tools would facilitate bringing together information to better manage natural resources, and that decision support processes would guide users through comprehensive analysis of the trade-offs among multiple resource values. And I believe that's the end of our slides for this program area.
On this little explanation here, we got the word various funds underneath the title. It says various funds. Can you kind of just break those out for us?
Sure.
Could you do that in the other? chart there?
Within the, Mr. Chairman, within the various funds, we're proposing funding sources from the various direct funds that fund the agency. So both from the Natural Resource Fund and from the Game and Fish Fund.
Okay. And when you said you manage the legacy funds, is that pink slide? That's the total amount of funds that are coming from the legacy fund, right? And you use DNR general fund money to manage them. Is that how that works? Is that what I understood before?
Mr. Chairman, those slides represent the pass through grants that we manage. $100 million for the current biennium from the Outdoor Heritage Fund and $50 million from the Environmental Trust Fund. We just manage those and pass them on to the other nonprofits or local governments who then use the funds. And we get a small portion of Outdoor Heritage Funds. We get, now I had it on my notes. I don't want to misspeak. In the last biennium, why can't I find my slide now? $175,000 per year to manage the Outdoor Heritage Funds, and that's an appropriation from the Outdoor Heritage Fund. And then $87,000 per year to manage the Environmental Trust Fund dollars, and that is from the trust fund dollars.
And that's not considered substituting or supplanting, correct?
Mr. Chairman, no, it's directly to support that work.
Good answer. Okay. All right, any questions? All right, then, Mr. Sandy, what is our plan for Monday here?
Mr. Chair and committee members, I guess the plan would be we would finish these divisions under the Department of Natural Resources, and then we also have scheduled the Department of Labor and Industry and Board of Soil and Water Resources. Overviews.
Okay, and then we get into bills on Wednesday, or?
Yes, Mr. Chair, on Wednesday we have a number of bills, at least seven of them.
Right.
Most they're bonding bills, mostly local.
They're mostly bonding bills. So if any of you know about, if you have bonding bills that you know are in this committee and you want them heard, let Mr. Sandy know, because it looks like we're going to start doing them on next Wednesday. And I was reminded by the majority leader a couple days ago that we've got 4 weeks before the first committee deadline. So if you're not getting your bills heard, start getting them heard, because the time starts flying fast around here, right? Mm-hmm. When you need bills done. So anything anybody on the committee needs to remind us about, or any announcements? No? Okay, then meeting adjourned. See you all Monday.